Session number 20376, Reel 1.
Peter Fisher, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
On the borders, Derbyshire and Nottinghamshire. In Nottinghamshire, but postal district, Derbyshire. In the Ariwaswa Valley, in a mining district, coal mining.
What was the name of the place?
Langley Mill.
Which year was this?
1930.
Did you grow up and have your schooling at Langley Mill?
Very little schooling. In fact, I remember going to school, but the next thing I knew was living at Derby, because I was taken ill, apparently with scarlet fever, and went into an isolation hospital at Derby, which is only about 8 miles away from Langley Mill anyway, but in the isolation hospital there. And meanwhile, my family moved to Derby. So all my schooling and really growing up was in Derby itself.
Were you in Derby in the Second World War years?
Yes.
Do you have any Second World War memories?
Yes. When I was almost 10, one memory, a very emotional memory, is just before I was 10, 1940 May. This is the time of the Dunkirk evacuation. Okay. The Sherwood Foresters were coming home, and this was a sure place to be able to get some of these quaint little Belgium coins, square ones with holes in the middle. They're good kids for scrounging those days. And they came in, Sherwood Foresters, outside the station, just in not, you know, immaculate order, but just standing there in ranks, loosely. And there's a really, the scruffiest lot of soldiers you could imagine. There's dirty, unshaven, scruffy, stained bandages on them. Rifles. And the kit bags. And there was a look in their eyes. It was a look that a 10-year-old just couldn't fathom. Not got the experience to do that. And it's haunted me. Oh.
Was it a look of exhaustion?
More than that. More than exhaustion. But if we take the story forward, Twelve years after, I came home from Korea, off the train at the same station, nobody there to greet us though, of course, and coming home from, just home from Korea, on leave. And when I got home, my father was at Passchendaele in 1418. But he asked me, was it like they say in the papers? I said, what's that, Dad? He said, well, trenches, dugouts, barbed wire, no man's land, patrolling. I said, yes, exactly like they say. And I saw that Dunkirk look in his eye, and I knew that he could see that same look in my eye. I'd come home. I couldn't understand it. No disbelieving. after being through hell and survived it and come home.
When you
and my father recognised that, and I recognised it. He'd been the same in Passchendaele. He'd never ever talked about it, and we never ever talked about it ever afterwards. But we knew we'd both been through the same experience at different times in our own separate lives, and it was something that probably drew us closer together in that respect.
When you were living in Derby, was there any bombing by the German Air Force?
Very little. I remember a barrage balloon being shot down over our, just way beyond our backyard. But they didn't seem to be able to home in. Mind you, read all sorts since about Enigma and all that, and getting German codes and that. But they never seemed to be able to home in on Derby, because Derby, of course, was the home of Rolls-Royce Merlin engine manufacturer, which if they had have... In fact, there was just one raid that shot up... In fact, if they shot up the Rolls-Royce works one day, strafing, no bombing, and that was the only aircraft that ever got near Rolls-Royce. And if they'd have been 5 minutes later, they'd have had a whole stream of workers there pouring out for lunchtime. But had very, very little in Derby. It was somehow, they managed to put them off the track of tracing, you know, the Rolls-Royce works.
So did the war affect you very much in Derby as a schoolboy?
Not a lot. Well, it affected me very much, you know. For instance, my schooling, I just passed a scholarship, went to a secondary school, the grammar school equivalent now, and I must admit, I played truant a lot. And of course, there was a raid continually, living going down into the shelter, and this was none of the teachers at the school sort of thing. They just took this as a matter of course, and there's lots of reasons that they shouldn't be there. But one thing about the teachers was that all the young teachers were in the forces. Got a lot of old some of the old fogies out of retirement, the teachers, and they never got me interested. That was another reason for playing truant. But even then, the physics and chemistry and maths and algebra that we did, it paid off in the end.
So you mean the air raid warnings gave you an excuse to dodge school?
Well, quite easily, yeah. But when you're up most of the night and, you know, disturbed nights continually, they never knew what to expect. In fact, the school had been evacuated from Derby, in the centre of the town, right onto the edge, a mill owner's old mansion in its own park. And frequently, well, the winters there were bitter. 1940 winter, especially. 1940-41. And we was in this big mansion, roaring coal fires in the fireplaces in each classroom. When they ran out of coal, which was frequently, they just sent us home. Otherwise, we'd be too shivering.
What was the name of the school?
Derby Central School for Boys. It was a wholly scholarship grammar school in that respect.
Did you take an interest in the course of the war?
Oh yes, you couldn't help it. That was the topic all the way through. The newspapers, what was on the radio. He was always listening in and avidly reading papers, looking at the maps. Especially in the early 40, 41, 42, wondering, you know, just how it was going to end.
Did you think the Germans might win?
At one time, yes. It was on the cards. It looked, we was up against it all the time.
Would you listen to wireless in the war?
Oh, a lot, yes.
To what?
To what? I can't. There was always the news programmes. There was also lots of music programs, but especially workers' playtimes, when there'd be someone would be visiting a works, and there'd be a show put on, and everybody's sing-songing along. I mean, this was the thing about the entire war. Everybody would break into song at the drop of a hat. You know, it was a group, small group or big group. Run, Rabbit, Run, and all that sort of thing.
Were there any servicemen around in Derby?
Oh, yes. I was stationed in Derby, you mean? Mostly it was the Yanks. And especially, there's a lot of army groups, coloured ones and white ones, never allowed to mix in the town on the same day, given a day off, night off, whites only or blacks only. But it was on the fringe also of some of the airfields, which began in Derbyshire, some parts in the agricultural part, South Derbyshire, and then spread right through Nottingham and Lincolnshire, where the Army Air Force, US Army Air Force was. Ready Source for Lucky Strikes and Philip Morris and Chewing Gum when they was in town.
How did the troops behave?
Very well, from my memory.
So you didn't get any disturbances?
Oh, no. Or if there was, it was kept quiet, which wouldn't be unusual in some respects, but you know, propaganda and all that sort of thing. You know, keep everybody's spirits up, and not too. There's bad enough things happening in the early part. Of course, the latter part, I remember seeing my first jet on one of the little aerodromes outside Derby. And I saw this thing streak along the ground and virtually stand on its tail as it went up, instead of climbing gradually like the Spitfires and the Lynx. Actually, it was an effort for them to climb into the air, but not this jet. Streaked along the ground, it stood on its tail. Didn't know what I was looking at, of course, then. It was all secret.
Any celebrations in Derby at the end of the war?
Oh, yes. VE Day, VJ Day. Two lots of celebrations for the two of them. You know, each separately. One being in May and one later on.
What happened during the celebrations?
Just street parties. Street parties, food, lots of... It's like having a gigantic birthday party. Lots of jelly and sandwiches and bits and pieces. And lots of lemonade and or Tizer, dandelion and burdock as it was then. But no such thing as Coke. And later in the evening, they'd be dancing in the streets, all families. I remember we had a barrel of beer in our kitchen for the fellas to be able to go and get a drink. So we didn't have to bother with pubs.
Can you tell me about going into the army yourself, please?
Yes, that's I was deferred. Of course, national service was in after 1945, conscription, 18 months. And I was deferred from the age of 18, 48, to complete an apprenticeship. And so on the day I was 21, apprenticeship completed, my call-up papers arrived also with the birthday cards. And I got another 1 or 2 weeks extension, mainly to finish some exams that I was doing. And then in July, I went to Bubnut Barracks. Of course, by that time, 1951, the Korean War had already been in existence for a year. And that was when the national service period was put up from 18 months to 2 years, because otherwise training people and getting them out into the Far East, it didn't give them long to be of any use in the war, in the Korean War. So they put it up to 2 years, basically just to meet the requirements of Korean War. Plus, of course, they did have NATO requirements that was building up in Europe. All the Cold War stuff meant that we had to have a lot of troops in Europe as well. So 2 years made more sense. I expect. Going to barracks from Derby, Midland Brigade Training Centre, trained for the Leicesters, the Lincolns, Warwicks and the Sherwood Foresters, Midland Brigade, Infantry Brigade at Bubnut Barracks there. And that's it's a shock to the system. I wrote a poem about it. I'd had nothing from when I was about 13, got interested in music, learning all about that. During my apprenticeship years, going to the School of Art at Derby and learning all about architecture and ornament and decoration that went on it. And in fact, nothing but beautiful things happening. Learning to draw, sign writing, beautiful shapes and everything, and proportion and ratio. And I looked on this, I know at one time I was looking back on this, and 8 years of something absolutely sublime. And then suddenly faced with going into the army. Infantry as well. Training. Drilling. And I remember not so many years ago now, only 3 or 4 years ago, setting out to write a poem about it, to actually show the all the beauty that had gone on beforehand, and then the ugliness of being in the army and in the war in Korea. But it changed. I set off to do that, but when I started writing, I found out that there was a rather special kind of beauty, even in the army. And this particularly was in Korea. And the one word for it really is comradeship. Relationship between chaps in adversity brings out something very, very special. And instead of this poem being in two parts, beautiful time and then the ugly time, it finished off as two beautiful times, two beautiful periods, but mainly because of the comradeship out in Korea.
But did you also get the comradeship in the basic training?
No, not in the same way. No, it's that was something kind of... You had to pull together, otherwise sometimes the whole platoon joint training, some infringement, and possibly the entire platoon would be penalised. So you learn to pull together, you know, in that way. But it was rather different in Korea when your life's at stake. When your mate's life is at stake and yours is at stake, you're looking after one another.
How did the people in charge of the basic training treat the recruits?
It was rough. Shouting, lots of orders, of course. Lots of nignogs. And nutter was... Nignog was the phrase then. Everybody was a nignog. You know, badly, you know, not trained, untrained was a nignog, and everybody was a nutter or a nutcase. But actually, it wasn't ill-treated. Okay, we only got enough to eat. Mind you, it was honed to fitness, degree of fitness. It was absolutely, you know, not an ounce of fat left on us after that 6 week training.
Were you able to do what they wanted you to do?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'd spent a lot of time in my teen years cycling all the way around Derbyshire. It was nothing to go out for a 100-mile bike ride of one day on a Saturday or Sunday. Nowadays, you have the London to Brighton bike ride, 58 miles, big sponsorship deals. If they had sponsorship in the 40s, I'd have made a fortune for someone else, but it wasn't known or wasn't thought of then. And when I wasn't doing that in the winter, I was rambling all around Derbyshire with a rucksack on my back. So the army trained, and sometimes sleeping rough in haystacks and barns and things like that. So it wasn't too much of a cultural shock to me, you know, doing the training, the initial training in the army. But it was a shock in Korea when you have to dig and dig your home, a dugout, down in the earth and all the muck, connected with trenches. Okay, and it was back to... That was a bit... That was an ugly bit.
We'll come on to Korea later.
Yes.
But can you tell me what you remember happening next in England?
Oh, it was rather good, really. We did our first 6 weeks training. Then was earmarked to go out to the Far East. Now, whether it meant going to the Leicesters, who were already in Korea, or the Sherwood Foresters, who were in the Malayan Peninsula, you know, the insurgency there that was going on. So to equip us for that, we had another 10 weeks period of training, which was less and less drill, but more and more infantry training. Fire and movement, section attacks, platoon attacks, you know, lots of things like that. Which finished up with 2 weeks up in North Wales, in the hills near Trawsfynydd, where there's nothing else but sheep, and training there with pouches full of live ammunition, whereas ammunition used to be counted out in fives on the rifle ranges. There we just had to fill up pouches with as much as we could carry, and we used it all up during the day, section attacks and section attacks and section all day long, you know, fire and movement, Bren gun section moving one way to give firing cover then so the rifle section can move up. Really learning, getting to grips with what an infantryman is, what they should do, should be capable of. And the thing is, coming back from there, and some of us older ones, being 21 when I was at that time, were just hived off to one side, right, you're joining the AHOH draft. This was a group about platoon size, about 30, 36 lads in it, earmarked straight away for draft for the Far East. So we got 14 weeks embarkation leave. And the nice thing was, we came back off that. A sergeant on parade the next morning. I suppose you'd like some more leave, would you? Yes, please, Sarge. See what I can do. He knew he was onto a good thing, obviously. Because he came back later in the day, was out on parade again. Right, how much would you like? A long weekend, 72? Oh, yes, please, Sarge. 16 days. He was in a training establishment. And we was no longer being trained. So it was an embarrassment, get rid of us. So October was more or less taken up entirely with leave, 30 days leave. It was great. Except when you was at home, or your mates were working, or at college. There was nothing to do during the daytime. It was rather boring, actually, being on that sort of long leave. A weekend was exciting when you'd be out with the lads at dances and in the pubs and things. But, and then our draft was still held there right through November, December, two or three route marches a week to get us out of the way. When we weren't doing that, fatigues around the camp, sometimes down in the sidings at Warwick, shovelling coal onto lorries for the camp, coal fatigue. Then we had a bit of Christmas leave, and then the moment we got back off that, that was it. We was off end of December, Liverpool, and out to the Far East. Which took us... there was a song at that time, I'd like to get you on a slow boat to China. And we was just about on the slowest, HT Lancashire. It took 5 weeks to get to Hong Kong. A life of doing nothing. On a troop ship. Not quite... you know, a luxury cruise, but it was a cruise where you did nothing because it was just every available space filled with fellas. What can you do? And we finished up in Hong Kong, and the nice thing was there, two family friends who'd gone out there, Ted Spencer, he'd gone out there in the colonial services, clerk of works, and they were there on the dockside at Kowloon just to meet me. A whole troop ship full of troops, and I was being met by a couple of civvies there on the quayside. There's a lad to come on the ship. And where we finished up there, attached to the 1st Wiltshire's A Company up at Lo Wu. Lo Wu is just north of Fan Ling. And all these seemed ancient. When you think of the culture of China, all the smells were just as old as well. But it was on Lo Wu where the railway from Kowloon up to Canton in real China, that was the border at Lo Wu, and trains used to go in at one end of the station, and people going north into China would have to walk along the station to catch one at the top end of the platform. And we were stationed there doing more training in the paddy fields. You're under attack, down, squelch, into all the muck and mud. And after a month or two of that, we got moved on again. And this time it was Kyori in Japan, where we went up to the battle school. And the battle school, they made it as lifelike as it could be. And it was. The training there was not much different to being in Korea. But even then, afterwards, we was left to our own devices. We'd done the training. We was in the camp. Nobody wanted any reinforcements at that time. Or it seemed like nobody was taking them. And so we was left to our own devices. So there was a big parade ground and a running track around it. And we used to go there all day long and just run 4x1 mile relays between us until the organisers, as a sort of inter-unit sort of meeting one day. And there, this is actually, probably a time that changed my life, because I actually volunteered, the thing you shouldn't do. But we're so bored stiff with having nothing to do. On company orders that night, they wanted volunteers to work in the unit pay office. Two in the unit pay office, one in the company pay office. And me and a friend, we volunteered to work in the unit pay office. And it was simple. As long as you could do arithmetic and read and write, you know, making out pay lists for payday and that, and sitting behind the other side of the desk on pay parade, it was marvellous. And that only lasted about 3 weeks, and the posting came through. In fact, our little group, half of them went off to the Leicesters. And then, because the Leicesters were due to end the battalion ending their tour, they were coming home later that year, so there's taking no more reinforcements. So it left us about 15 of us, just a loose end. And meanwhile, I was working in the pay office. And then our own posting came through to the King's Shropshire Light Infantry. Mind you, it had been, we had did have thoughts, there's rumours going round, the Black Watch are coming out and we'll be transferred to them. And of course, nobody thought like the idea of going round in skirts. Or should I say kilt? So actually going to the Shropshires was quite a good thing. But light infantry, rather different drill and training for the than the heavy infantry. But the thing was there, it was in Budbrook Barracks when I joined that draft came together, that I made a very close friendship with young fella, same age as myself almost, just a month difference in our ages, from Scunthorpe. And it was a sort of telepathic, you know, welding together, and became best friends all the way out on troop ships in Hong Kong, Japan. And it was only then that we got split up. When we got to the Shropshires, I went to A Company, he went to C Company. And if I can just jump a little bit, a few months here, because actually when we pulled out of the line to come home to just north of Seoul to reorganise, to then go down to Busan for the boat home, the whole battalion, I was coming from the streams one night and the sergeant major was going. Big 6'6" Cornishman, Jean Passmore. Nice chap, really. All these CSMs, they have to have live voices, they shout a lot, but at heart, he was a good one. And want to see you in the morning, boy, he says. And start shaking. So don't worry, nothing to worry about. Nothing at all to worry about. So I went to see him next morning. He said, now we're going home, we need a company clerk. I said, well, I know nothing about clerking. You worked in the unit pay office in Kyori, didn't you, he says. I said, yeah, that's good enough for me, he says. The job's yours, except you've got to see the company commander, Major Hill, sort of thing, little interview first. And that gave me my first responsibility. Because then, when we had nothing to do on the troop ship coming home, but then at Whittington Barracks, lies between Lichfield and Tamworth, In fact, our company strength, the battalion, just dwindled right down to nothing from 800. People, regulars, especially going...